Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday. We are loving the chat. And just as a friendly reminder, please do use the chat today during our time together. If you'll just make sure the dropdown says everyone, we will all get to see that. And lots of fantastic advice regarding back to school shopping, what your most critical supply is, from a brand new first day of school outfit to a dry erase markers, all critical. And we wish Malcolm good luck as he takes a ninth grader back to school shopping later today. May it not drain the bank account for you. So I do just want to say happy Friday, everybody. We are so excited to have you guys with us today as we get to learn from Cynthia and Malcolm, who are just two consummate professionals. You are in a great space to learn with just two incredible professionals. So all of this came about because Cynthia is the most amazing person, as is Malcolm. And each Monday, we're sending out a newsletter. If you're not getting this, put it in the chat and we'll make sure you receive this. It's kind of the top five things happening in higher ed for the week. And so this was a couple of weeks ago. I sent this out and Cynthia immediately replied because article number three was about fully online students now outnumber in-person students. And article number five was really important research about today's typical college student is really anything but that. And there's a beautiful project of documentation, photographic documentation of what today's college students look like. And I know I'm going to be using that day one with my first year experience students at Piedmont Virginia Community College on the 25th of August when we get started. So Cynthia sent me an immediate email and said, we got to talk. Malcolm and I are going to talk about these things. So thanks, Malcolm, for being willing to get voluntold to come and join us. Welcome, guys. And just as a friendly reminder, you can share our podcast after we wrap up. We think it pairs nicely with a cup of tea or a good walk around campus. So, you know, again, just so thrilled to have Malcolm and Cynthia with us today, and they just bring a wealth of resources and information. You know, as always, I've prepared probably too many questions, sorry guys, for our 45-minute conversation today. But want to remind everybody, put your questions in the chat. Just make sure they say go to everyone, we will get that to you. So get those and weave those into our conversation today. So Cynthia and Malcolm, all of this got prompted, as I showed, by our Monday musings newsletter reporting about more students are now fully online than on campus. Huge shift. It's not a huge shift. I think it's a shift that we've been seeing coming, but it really does make us think differently about how we're providing services to students. And Cynthia, I know in particular, this is really, you know, an area of passion and expertise for you. So just going to pause there and say, what are you seeing? What are you recommending? Are you shocked?
Well, you know, it's wild to say this. In some ways, the pandemic was a blessing for online learning. Mm-hmm. And that is to say, we are celebrating our 50th year of distance learning at Northern Virginia Community College. And so we are not used, are not new to correspondence courses, to courses on TV, radio, things of that nature. But once a pandemic happens, or once a power outage happens, or a flood happens, or a hurricane happens, worlds change, right? And so what happened with the global pandemic is everybody had to get out of their comfort zone, right? And go from, you know, I know that online learning exists too. Well, we're all in this together doing online learning. And that was pandemic pedagogy. When thankfully COVID eventually passed and people started going back to the workforce after a year to 2 years, depending where you were in the world, there was a new normal, right? And people came back and they said, Well, I don't want to sit in Virginia traffic, which is where we live, which is right outside of Washington, D.C. I saw there's some Texans there. I've been on I-10 before. I've been on different freeways in different areas before. Traffic isn't new to anyone. And, now that I have a home office at home or Wi-Fi at home and this maybe this technology that I didn't have in the past, now that it's accessible to me, why should I have to go in, and why should I have to change my work schedule and my children's daycare schedule or school schedule so that I can take a class that everybody's offering online now? And so we've really had to kind of change the way we think about online educate or education in general. It's no longer these four-year universities offering these in-person residential courses, which definitely exist, but everybody's part of the global market now. It's Coursera, it's two-year institutions, it's private institutions, it's community colleges. And so we have to remain competitive. And so what the shift means is everybody has to just make a decision: where are my students coming from and where are they going? And so what we're seeing here, we're still serving students who are low-income students, students who represent 180 different countries in near our nation's capital. But what we're also seeing is people who are saying, I rank my education lower on my priority list, so you need to fit in with my world versus me fit in with your world. And so those are the things that, as we engage students and engage faculty, we're kind of having to reframe. What our typical student was is no longer our typical student. They are very much a consumer of education and information, and we are no longer the only game in town. And so we've really had to make that shift. And for us, it was an easy shift, but for others, it's a little bit more challenging. And so that takes a lot of professional development, a lot of engagement, and a lot of intentional planning. I'm going to let Malcolm speak a little bit too, if you want to, my friend.
Well, no, absolutely. With this online space, nothing new. And a lot of students, especially in the dual enrollment space with our high school students, sometimes online is the only option they have. They have their full schedules that they're managing at the high school. But them, it's either the students or the families, because sometimes you get parents who are like, "You're doing this, whether you like it or not. Dual enrollment, we're going to take advantage of it." They want to accelerate their progress towards their degree because they want to get to what they call the bag right away, as fast as possible, and they want to get a head start, save some money. So we are seeing a lot of students in our dual enrollment space sign up for these online courses. So for us, as they're trying to maximize their time, handle their full schedule, sports, they're seeing online courses as another opportunity to make that happen for themselves. And able to go through that asynchronous, self-paced way. But for us, it's really about how we continue to support them through that space, because sometimes they sign up for online and don't realize that they're kind of really on their own other than office hours. So you got to onboard them the right way, give them that right attention. I think how I got introduced to IE was through this new online orientation that we created with you all. So that was a great way to have all that information in one space and get them truly prepared for what they're about to get into, and having those conversations about what online looks like versus in person, or a mixture of having a Zoom, and then that continued support while they're in these classes, making sure that we have some check-ins and these resources that they'll have access to no matter where they're at. I was thinking about like some of the popular, very popular resources that our students use, and the virtual tutoring is the top resource that they use, because again, they can't make it to campus. I know in some of these questions you have that regular 9 to 5 traditional mindset. Our students are definitely operating outside of that 9 to 5. So when for non-traditional students and for our high school students, by the time it hits 5 and they really run into a problem, we need to be able to get them the support that they need while they're at home or just wherever they are taking the classes. So definitely seeing that big jump, and the college has to move in the right way to provide that support to make sure they're successful in that space.
You know, I've thought about, I have a student who's a dual enrollment learner in our Virginia Community College system. And I've thought about the convenience that he has. He's very fortunate. His high school is 2 miles from the college, right? So he can do early release. We've had a lot of discussions about this, and drive right to the tutoring center and have a twice weekly appointment for calculus. I'm just, this will make my heart so happy when it all comes together, fingers crossed. That he will listen to his mom. But I mean, thinking about the Northern Virginia area and the challenges of traffic and the challenges of transportation and students not having access to vehicles necessarily, right? And so the importance of, yes, I'm taking a class through you, but I still need support services. But it doesn't matter if your campus is 10 miles from me, it might as well be in the next state, right? Or 5 miles from me. So that. That critical need, as you've said, and I love that you're seeing a lot of use of online tutoring, because to me that says you guys are doing a fantastic job promoting it, explaining that it's there, students are aware of it, and they're really being encouraged to use it. So kudos to you all. Malcolm, I'm curious about a little bit more about dual enrollment. So one of the things I'm hearing anecdotally from the dual enrollment students in our neck of the woods is that they are shopping dual enrollment classes through our community college system. So very, I mean, and it's interesting because they're doing this outside of some of the parameters of the structured MOUs we have, right? So they are
Oh,
in
okay,
the
I got you. Yep.
system, so they know they can take classes. Sometimes they're probably paying for this, would be my guess.
Yeah, there are more independent dual enrollment experiences. Again, trying to make the most of the time that they have and accelerate their progress towards something. That is definitely a thing. But continue.
Fascinating, right? I mean, they're like, I'm 17 years old and they're savvy enough to go, whether or not we believe Rate My Professor, I'm still offended I never got a Chili Pepper, guys. But you know,
Bless.
whether or not we believe that Rate My Professor is a good resource, they're shopping teacher reviews to pick classes so that they're going to have the best possible asynchronous online experience because
Very
that's
true.
what they're needing to do. And I am sure if it's happening in the state of Virginia, it's happening anywhere else, right? So I think that goes back to Cynthia's comment that our students have really become savvy consumers of education. And that's not limited to a 27-year-old adult, right? That's these high school students are.
That's a 15, 14-year-old now. They get younger and younger every year. And you have somebody walk into your office that's like 12 years old, especially with the homeschool student populations for dual enrollment. And they're like, well, I've already completed 11th, 12th grade work here. I should be able to do this. So we're also having to deal with changing up policies and approaches to our younger student populations. But yeah, now they are shopping around, and Dr. Pascal introduced me to something that I wasn't even aware younger people were using, but Reddit. And using that as sort of like, hey, anybody know any great calculus teachers? Who's the easiest math professor to take out here? I want to troll it and sometimes be like, it's not about the teacher, it's about the student and the approach. But they are using that. They're using social media to figure out what is the right pathway, what's sometimes the easiest pathway. They'll realize once they get into that class that it's not always the easiest. But what's my path again to accelerate my progress, to get the head start, and for parents' sake, to save some money in there.
The particular subject areas you've mentioned, you know, the use of tutoring, but are there subject areas that you're seeing both with your online learners? And I mean, Nova does have a huge, you have the largest online presence in the state. And is there still shared services, Cynthia? And maybe if you and Malcolm could talk a little bit about both shared services, but Malcolm, then also changes in legislation, because again, I think these are national trends. I think this is really, sorry, Malcolm. Sorry, take some deep breaths, man.
Legislation is a soft spot right now. We're dealing with lots of new legislation in the state of
We are. But I think it's important to have that context, right, as we have these conversations, because this is just, it's happening all over the place. So I'm going to stop there so y'all can talk more about, and Malcolm does the
So
script after.
Nova is very unique, and that's why I didn't feel bad that we're both from representing Nova on this conversation. We're unique in that we're the second largest community college in the nation, and the sixth largest online student population in the nation for community colleges. And so we really are working with demographics that are diverse from social economic status to cultural backgrounds to locations. And so, when we talk about your typical students, we're talking about literally everyone you can think of, which is wild. That's not new. And so when you're building these scaffold approach on how to serve these students, you have to build them as if you're talking to a rural student who is in rural Virginia taking an advanced Arabic class versus a student who might be taking that very same class, but live across the street and can walk over. And so, as we build our support systems and our support frameworks, we're really looking at a couple things. How do we make it so it's not time and space limited? How can we grant the most amount of access to the most amount of students, for scale? How do we make it accessible, not just accessible for cost, but accessible for our divergent learners? And how do we keep it modern so that we are competing again, not only with other institutions, but modern technologies, right? How do we make tutoring more of an ethical choice than cheating with artificial intelligence, right? And so we really have to be mindful as we're creating these structures of how to think not only as a student, but an everyday modern person in the modern community. And so we have this conglomeration of community colleges who are at different levels of funding. And so what we have is called the shared services distance learning model. And so not everybody can offer that advanced Arabic teacher. Maybe you can find the faculty member in your region, but you certainly don't have 35 students to run the course. And so what we do is a shared program where we say, let's kind of hodgepodge this together with different people in different communities and bring them under one umbrella of services so that everybody can win and get the education they need. But that also means that we have to be mindful of how we set up the tutoring services for them, how we set up the library services. What are the testing limitations? Can everybody, when we talk about a proctored exam, for instance, can they go to their local testing center or do they need to download a technology? Well, if you're a dual enrollment student who's borrowing a computer from a high school, there's certain things you can download and certain things you can't without permissions. And so you really have to take this very wide lens approach to serve maybe 35 students. And so that's what we do. I think very creative about these things and very intentional about these things. And when we do it to reduce the load for the administration, which is what Malcolm and I are in, is we bake them right into our websites. We bake them right into our syllabi. We bake them into our course design. So every place where the student needs the resource, it's being shared. And it's being shared again 24/7 a day. So our orientation, which we happen to get through Innovative Educators, is 24/7, and that's where it introduces them to on-demand resources that are 24/7 and on-demand services that are 24/7, and we just bake it and scaffold it right in it. And it looks like we have a lot of DE questions in the chat, so I'm going to turn it over to Malcolm so we definitely hit
I'm
up the
just, I was,
right
I was just
groups.
typing out some other answers to it, and while trying to pay attention, I'm like, this isn't gonna work for me. So yeah, in response to the question on the in the chat, right? There's always room for growth in how we approach the advising support. And if you are in this dual enrollment space, you may have experienced the challenges when trying to get academic advising to say, hey, we work with all dual enrollment students, come in, and not experience a little bounce around. So we've been working hard to figure out a timeline for our dual enrollment students when would be the best time for them to start working with advising here on campus and being able to go to them directly and say, hey, I want to take a course. So there's different scenarios that we had to uncover or help people realize and talk through with them. So we have our dual enrollment contract courses that are offered at the high school by credentialed teachers. And when they don't have a credentialed teacher, that means that they have to take the course as an independent dual enrollment student for now, not until this new legislation came out. But they have to take that course on campus, Nova Online, and they have to cover tuition for it. So when students exhaust all opportunities at the high school and they've made it as far as they can through a certain program or degree and they just need more, that is when they are able to work with our academic advising. They first check in with their counselors and say, hey, what do we have here at the high school that we have that is offered completely tuition free for us? And they cover the cost of textbooks and other materials. And then once we're done exhausting these options, where else do we go? So they could work with our dual enrollment office, our dual enrollment coordinators, very large caseloads in that case, their counselor. And then again, once they have exhausted all opportunities there, start working with our academic advising. And we've also developed a senior transition plan. So it's like these definite times when messaging starts going out to graduating seniors. Where are you at? Here goes an opportunity right in your backyard. Save some money, complete what you've already started type of idea, and work with academic advising to get yourself, we call it Nighthawk ready, by April when registration for the fall opens up, or for a summer registration if you want to continue on in that way. But advising is definitely it's challenging at times. I'm like trying to find the right word, but it's not an easy thing to say, hey, yeah, we have these 1,000 students who have who are going to be coming here probably after school. So between like 3 o'clock and five, they're with their parents, they have lots of questions. And they're probably going to mix in some high school counseling type of questions as well. So don't panic. Feel comfortable with sending them back to their high school with those courses, but use the same approach that we use with our traditional students because all of them are just progressing towards one of our degree programs anyway. So let's coach them up on that and help them understand how to choose courses in that
And
way.
that's where I'm going to chime in right now because academic advising is my first love. But that's the importance of this modern learner. They're not typical, right? And so they do need academic advising, just like most students need academic advising, but they might not have the transportation to get to your advisors. They might not have the wherewithal to do the time management to do it during business hours. They might not have the comfort level. And so, as you talk about how you build out any program for a modern learner, whether it be advising and counseling, whether it be tutoring, also making these resources available asynchronously online. And so that means excellent websites that are clear and give good content. That might mean creating a chat bot for your students so that they can get 24-hour advising, at least first level advising. And if the bot can't answer a question, then it sends them off to an email during business hours. So it's talking about not just thinking creatively, but thinking, how do you do it for the masses? Because each of us in this room, all 52 of us, are funded differently, right? And maybe we have all the funding we need. We just don't have more than 40 hours in our work week. And so that means you can still only see a finite amount of students. And so that's where you really have to build up these programs and build up these resources in an asynchronous online way. That everybody can access, mom, dad, community members, et cetera, so that students can make informed decisions no matter where they're coming to you. Because that's what they're really looking for these days is information.
And we also just jumped into the it's a shared virtual advising space. Just going to share this in the 9 to 5 because we also have some extended hours on Mondays in there. But now our dual enrollment team just new this month has jumped into that virtual advising space for those students and at a time when they get out of school, when they really have the chance to get with their parents and think about the questions and they'll have somebody available to them from I think 2 to 5 o'clock. And then on Mondays, we extend it to 7 p.m. But that gives them the opportunity to connect with somebody right away and get some of their questions answered. So we're still collecting data, still promoting it in a real way. Once school starts, I'm sure we'll get a lot more takers, but that virtual advising space is also another good way to for us to start connecting with our students to talk about advising and supports and helping them figure things out. Yeah.
These are complicated processes that we're asking students with, I'm just going to say, limited vocabulary, right, to navigate. I mean,
Yes,
I find it
access.
complicated, and I've worked in the system, and I have language, and I'm still not sure how it works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
And sometimes like the applications don't work right. We had a case yesterday where they got bounced around like five different people and there was errors that they were experiencing, we were experiencing. And it was just something with the system at the time. So it's like how many students run into that same situation when they're trying to access it from their school. Dr. Pascal, you mentioned something about I think the access that they got when they have their school laptops. That also works with the email types that we create. Even for our dual enrollment faculty, they're not official employees of the college, so they have an email that doesn't give them all the access that they can have to like library resources. So we have to start again thinking creatively around how we get that same access to this faculty so they can bring it to their classrooms, bring it to their students, and really have a chance to make good use of them.
Well, and that speaks, and I'm curious what other people's experiences are on the call. Like, we're asking students as well whether they're coming to us as a fully, as an enrolled college level student or as a high school dual enrollment student. We're asking them to navigate complex systems. And often in my experience with dual enrollment students, they are navigating multiple systems because my high school system is this over here. And so I'm using PowerSchool and I'm using Schoology, which I'm never going to be a salesperson for Schoology. Sorry, people. And then, with our community college system, we're using Canvas and we're using PeopleSoft. And so we're navigating now two different logins, two different places.
Emails,
Yes, two
yes.
different emails. I mean, and then you're right. And the faculty may or may not have the same level of access. I mean, I even think in our system, sometimes full-time faculty have different access, or it used to be than adjunct instructors, right? As far as like being able to tell what a student's if they completed math requirements and things like that. So, wow, you're right,
Yeah.
Cynthia. Website content, bot opportunities, because you don't ask these. I don't know. In my household, students do not ask these questions conveniently at 2 o'clock. My students like to ask
Never.
these questions at 9 o'clock at night,
Yeah.
if
And
not 9 a.m.
when you're designing for the modern learning, you have to design with intentionality, right? And so think about yourself going to school. So, for me, I don't have children, so I don't have to worry about soccer practice, piano lessons, things like that. But I do have responsibilities after work. So, like after I get off work, then I do XYZ, then I cook dinner, and then I have my spare time. So, what is my frame of mind at about 8 o'clock at night when I have my Cynthia's free time? Well, my frame of mind's pretty burnt out. Right. And so 8 o'clock, Cynthia is not fresh and ready to read complex things. She wants what she wants when she wants it. She knows she doesn't have to go in person to get it. Like, I did a mortgage a couple years ago and did it 100% virtually. Like, I didn't even have to sign until the last day in person. And so like I'm not going into your bank. So like what is this modern person's expectations and how do we get that information to that person's at 8 o'clock at night? And again, what's the consequences if we don't? Well, the consequence might be they're frustrated and they just try again tomorrow. The other consequence is they go on to your competitor, or maybe competitor is not the right word, but another institution's website that is just a smidge better. It doesn't even have to be great. But if it's a smidge better, especially when you think about online learning and that whether it's asynchronous or synchronous online learning, you're no longer space restricted. So you really can go to the best in town or the best out of town for that matter. And so really designing with intentionality, creating your programs with intentionality for these modern learners, not only will make them more accessible on the front end so that they can get registered, but also makes it so it's easier for them to complete. It's one thing to get people in the door. It's another thing to get them successfully through the door and into their next course. And that's where that intentionality has to be baked in as well. So it's making sure that all pieces of the puzzle are there so that the student can get to graduation.
Guys have done, I mean, Cynthia, you all have done so much work with the online learning space, but I know if I've read correctly, dual enrollment has been very intentional about designing a program to get students that you're really thinking about who are we serving, how are we making sure that we're serving students who might not have these opportunities otherwise, right, in our community,
The true chase for access.
I mean,
Not the
you've
ones who
been
are like
very
knocking at your
intentional.
door, but there's lots of people who really need the opportunity. And how do you get to those people and get
Right.
the word to them? How are you chasing access? Because the people who are at your door all the time, they have the support, the people who are guiding them through the process. But what about those groups? And this comes in for outreach and recruitment as well, when we develop our community partnerships and we bring the resources and the services right to them in their space. I'm thinking of a few like nonprofits who we go there and we do info sessions and bring all our resources and our departments with us to that site so that they can, again, get some access, learn more about what's right in their backyard. So, absolutely.
So, as you're talking about this intentional approach, sometimes in higher ed, what I experience is let's remember how you used to get in the box of cereal, like those octopus things that you would throw at the wall walkers, and they would kind of walk down. Sometimes it feels like I'm in higher ed spaces where we're just throwing wall walkers at the wall, and we're going to look to see what sticks. What takes a long time to walk down, what just kind of falls. But you all have been so intentional about this building out. Any advice for the people who are listening? This is not one of our questions, but any advice for the people who are listening about how we do this kind of very thoughtful and intentional designing of programs? Like, how do you get people to listen? How do you get people to buy in? If you could just solve that small problem for us all, it'd be
No big
fantastic.
deal.
No big deal.
Not a big deal. I could use one program that we have here that we just launched last year. It's called Start Early, Start Strong. It's with Arlington Career Center, and it's a pathway focused around cybersecurity in the IT space. So data definitely helped lead to that, right? Knowing that in Northern Virginia data centers, like just the IT, the technology world, information engineering technology world is pretty big out here, and there's lots of demand in the workspace for that. Using that as like the basis, we latched onto some good partners that we've already had, and we know offered lots of dual enrollment classes in the IT space. So they had the students who were interested, right? So it went from the high school to Nova, and then who are the four-year institutions that we partner well with, have articulation agreements, we'll be able to provide the resources and the support to students looking to transition from community college to the four-year college. And then we latched onto one big cherry on top, Amazon AWS, who is the employer out there that we partner with well already, know has opportunities and can bring somebody to the table. This was a voluntold type of experience that came out of it. It came from our president. She was on the educational, well, EDL, I'm forgetting the acronym, but she was a part of that group and she was a designer for that program. So she kind of put us in that space. But we were able to meet with these different partners, these four partners, all at the table at the same time and design a program in unison with students and families, matching their needs. Bringing out the focus on IT and cybersecurity as one of those high demand areas, and build up a summer bridge program that helped them transition into that IT space. But from there, all the engagement with this cohort, knew we had to expand on it, so we turned it into a full year experience with some fall and some spring. But I guess the point is to make sure you have these partners that you already have and do work well with. Bringing everybody to the table to design something that is student-centered, And again, high demand in your area, so you know that people are going to be interested because that's all the talk in Northern Virginia. And you see these data centers just popping up everywhere. So I think those partnerships that you already have, trying to leverage them and put the pieces together and having those discussions with them was one of our big things in designing pathways for our students to work through.
And I'll just
Welcome.
speak to it a little bit more woo-woo-y, I guess. I'm a psychology major in trade, and we keep our mission statement really in part of our intentionality plan. And I keep it so close to me that I literally carry it with me in my daily planner. And I did put it in the chat, but we believe that we should be providing equitable access. So equitable access is important to us, not just for the one sub, not just for Loudoun students, but also for Fairfax students, but also for Manassas students, since we are a huge region. So equitable access can be the type of student. It needs to be affordable and exceptional. It can't be one or the other. Cheap isn't good and good isn't cheap. It has to be affordable and exceptional. And it has to transform the lives of our students and advance their opportunity in the community. So when I build anything, or when we build anything, we really kind of keep these five E's in mind. One, the excellence part, it has to be good. There's no point in doing it if you're not going, I wouldn't say do it perfect, but you need to make sure that you're putting a good product out there, not just a product out there. Two, it has to be equitable in its design. Again, equitable access, making sure everybody has the opportunity. It has to be rooted in evidence, which is data close to practice, which is what Malcolm was saying. What does the workforce need? What do your students say they need? What do your transfer institutions need, say they need? It has to be rooted in empathy. Empathy, again, putting yourself in the student's shoes. When we build this out, what are they going to experience? And last but not least, it has to lead to economic and social mobility. So any program you're creating for these modern learners, if it doesn't help them to get to the next career level, that's a problem. We don't want students, we don't want to recreate the cycle of poverty, right? So we're not building these beautiful programs for our hearts. We're building it so our students can actually get a job and get engaged and get to the next level. And if, or, with the federal government being right by, if they've lost their job, getting back into the stream of life and getting them onto their next job. So really, the five E's again: excellence, equity, evidence, empathy, and economic and social mobility. That's how we remain intentional. And when you do that, it's easy to get buy-in, especially if you have that evidence, that data close to practice, because your numbers don't lie. So that's one of the things that we do a little bit, maybe differently, but or more strategically than other groups.
Yeah. In
Rachel's
our
question.
leadership, make sure we keep that in mind as well. So if you ever design something there, President Kress is absolutely asking that question, or VP Chang is asking those questions. How does this match with our mission, and is it equitable?
How are these five E's reflected
In
in
what you're
this
doing.
work that you're doing? And
And
Rachel
also,
has shared as well.
I'm cheering on Rachel from I'm a Rachel
Yes.
fan in the sidelines. The last thing is, I will say, that goes to that. It also helps with the budgeting. What are we going to fund and what aren't we going to fund? If it's not rooted in those five E's or tied to our mission statement, it's not a priority. And so that's how, when you're asked to do more with less, with less, that's how I can make those really strategic decisions as well.
We only have 5 minutes. I know, didn't this go by so fast?
Yeah,
I
it
want to
did.
get to our last question, because I knew this would be a really fun one for you, the two of you, I think. Just if you could redesign higher ed from scratch, and it doesn't, not your top, what would be your top priority? And I think about this so often. My last assignment in graduate school was cohort practice, where we built an institution from the ground up, and it had to be rooted in theory. And it's amazing to see 20 some years later how wellness, right, is so centered Now it's so many of our institutions. We were just visioning things that were yet to come. So we'd love to hear from you. What would, if you could redesign higher ed, what would be a top
So we go one for one. She says her first place in last year mine.
priority?
For me, it would be faculty. The type of the excellence in teaching faculty, that's what they're coming here for. And we want to make sure that they are with faculty who are I guess excellent, somebody that they can learn from, that is excited to be in the classroom with them to teach, and will get them to the next level.
And that's hard to do, Malcolm, I think, in that dual enrollment space, because you're not always getting to teach that, right? Or to touch that, right? You're relying on these school systems that are providing you faculty or yeah. So how are our faculty creating classrooms that are engaging, exciting, empathetic? So many of your E's fall right into those best practices and teaching too, Malcolm. That
Yeah,
really
there's a
important.
lot of teachers out there that want to teach, but the credentialing is also a challenging area as well. So,
That's a whole other podcast.
yeah, that's absolutely.
Cynthia, what about you?
So, one of the things, if I could redesign, I would redesign it for today's learner, right? When education was designed, there's this great documentary called Unlikely. It was designed for rich white men. And then brought to the States, right? And I know this is a global conversation. I saw there was someone from Rwanda and Canada, so I'm speaking from a United States perspective. But so it wasn't designed for at least what my school looks like. So my school is 2 year. It's people from every social and economic background. And most people aren't here full time. I tell you that much. We're primarily part time. We have 76% part timers. And so I would design first with that in mind, right? Our modern students aren't the students who our system was created for. So I would de design for today, right? So our students represent, again, 180 countries, are primarily part time, and they don't consider themselves a student first. They consider themselves maybe a spouse first, maybe a child first, maybe a mother first, or a father, they a church member first, all the a coach first, and then a Nova Nighthawk. Right. And a lot of times it's not even Nova Nighthawk. They might think they're a George Mason student. I'm pre-George Mason
I'm
versus a
here as
Nova
well.
Nighthawk, right? We're not even on their scale. And so that a system that's designed where they think of us here, but we think we're up here in this ivory tower is not helpful. So I think that would be the first thing I would do, design for where our modern learner is. And then I'm going to say this. I'm going to take two and then bounce one back to Malcolm so he can take the second one. I would engage faculty, students, and staff in EduPlay, right? Thinking a little less about that cookie cutter of where we were at before. This was my experience in high school, so this has to be your experience in high school. And this was my experience in college, so this has to be your experience in college. And this is my experience in the workforce, so this has to be your experience in the workforce. No, let's play around with it. Let's break systems that no longer work for us and break education that and technology that no longer works for us. What could it be? Rather than asking for what it is or what might I do, what could I do? And artificial intelligence is great for that. How could I design a program for my intro to psychology students? Well, when you ask it that way, it says, well, if it's for a workforce assignment, it could be this. If you're doing experiential learning, it could be this. If you're doing it to prepare them for another class in psychology, it could be this. Or if it's just kind of a throwaway assignment, you could do this. It puts all these different lenses and then tinker around with it. So I would put EduPlay into it. And now I'm going to think while he gives one of his.
I'll quickly say the transitions of our students, right? From when they transition to the college, they transition to the next semester, and then they start transitioning out focusing on what those transitions of our students are looking at all levels. So that does play into a little bit of what she was talking about with the supports and the right timing and making sure we get it to the people and the way we bring the services to them and the supports to them. But I think transitions are important. And then the support again during the experience, because a lot of students that we serve, again, they're career changers, first timers, trying to see if higher education is right for them. Maybe didn't believe in themselves before, but the community college student population is very diverse. So how we support our students, it has to be a big factor, because we don't know what levels they're at and where we're trying to get them to.
So much at our house right now about transition. I mean, every school year start, right, is a new transition. Every semester start is a new transition. And I got a kid going off to college. So big transition. And I really put it in a framework that this is a skill we need for life. Right? Life it, transition is just part of life. So it's yet another skill set. Just like we need to make sure our students know how to take notes and read effectively in the college environment, they need to know how to navigate transition too. Cynthia, you get the final word. Go for it,
Final
girl.
word. And I would say, as you're building things out, for your starting from scratch world, removing barriers, not only to get in, but to return. Life happens. We talked about the pandemic. Maybe it's a health scare. Maybe it's just you found out that you are not a good dual enrollment student and you need time to mature, making it easy for students to come back. And I think that's really creating a culture of care and empathy, and saying, okay, now what? So being helping students to fail gracefully so that they can return gracefully and in a safe space. And that's
This
it.
has been just the best 45 minutes to spend on a late summer Friday, as right as we get ready, 10 days out from the school start for Nova. I know a few days out, Malcolm. I think, do you start your ninth grader start on Monday?
The 18th,
Monday.
yes.
Yes, for many of us starting the school year. I'm just so grateful. I mean, I've made a whole page of notes here, just about things that you're sparking my mind that I want to make sure I bring to my students and to the conversations I'm having with colleagues across the United States. So thank you both so much for your time on a Friday. I hope we can keep having these conversations because it's kind of fun. I'm not going to lie, Malcolm and Cynthia. A treat and an honor to get to talk with you both today. I do want to let folks know next month, actually, it's September 26th, we're going to keep talking dual enrollment, Malcolm. We're just real excited about this topic. So, Areli Garcia Tulloch from CCRC is going to join us to talk about trends in dual enrollment, some of her research. So, feel free to hop on that one. We'll make sure that is available to everyone. We'll send that out too. So, and today's podcast will go out to those of you listening. It'll be available on your GoTo Knowledge platform as well, and you'll find us on any major podcasting network. And we do like to think we pair nicely with a walk around campus or a good cup of tea. So thank you both so much. I hope you have a great start to the academic year and look forward to our next conversation. Take care.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Friday Five Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers six online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.